Hello, artists, and welcome to Season 5 of the Acting for Your Life podcast. This is Katherine Ziegler. Thanks so much for tuning in. We're so pleased you could be here. As I said, we are into Season 5 of the Acting for Your Life podcast, and we're going into our 11th year of the Acting for Your Life program. We couldn't do it without you, and thank you for your excitement, your enthusiasm, for sharing the program, for taking the classes with us. We are pleased to announce our new unlimited live streaming training courses at the Acting for Your Life website, actingforyourlife.com. You want to go to actingforyourlife.com, check out the registration button, and find out all of the different programs that we offer, including those unlimited live streaming training courses that I mentioned, also our live workshop series, special events, and Acting for Your Life TV, AFYL TV on YouTube. Today's guest for Wise Words Wednesdays is comedian Steve Hofstetter, and you'll know Steve the minute you hear his voice. He was on The Late Late Show with Craig Ferguson. He was on ABC's Barbara Walters special. He's also been featured in E's True Hollywood Story. His fifth album, Pick Your Battles, reached number one on the iTunes comedy charts, and he has great perspective on what it's like to be an artist in today's performing arts industry. He also has a very special program developed just for comedians who are trying to find balance in life and career. So without further ado, it is my pleasure to welcome Steve Hofstetter to the Acting for Your Life podcast. Hi, Steve. Welcome to Wise Words Wednesdays.
Well, thank you. Thanks for the kind words. I'll try not to disappoint.
Well, I want to thank you for being a guest on the podcast. I know you have a crazy busy schedule, but I'm wondering if you wouldn't mind sharing with our listeners how you began in the world of entertainment. At what age did you know you were a pretty funny guy and you wanted to make that your living?
Those are two very different questions. I was always interested in entertainment. You know, I'm one of these guys that when I was 11 years old, my sister and I, you know, put together with a little tape recorder, put together our own quote unquote radio show, which I still have a tape of, by the way.
That's awesome.
Sports radio show that we would do. And, you know, we were big fans of WFAN in New York. And then when I was 13, a cute girl told me to join the improv group, and I had no spine, so I said, sure. And then she quit 2 weeks later, and I was already hooked. And kind of ever since then, I've been involved somehow. You know, I was in plays. It's one of those things that, like, I remember as early as, like, third grade. You know, there was always the school play.
Sure.
And I remember, like, reading for some small part because I didn't really know any better, and then they handed me the lead.
Wow.
I was like, wait, what? And it turns out it was probably just because I could speak English. I went to school in Queens. So, but then I've just been kind of involved in one way or another ever since. I didn't really know I could do it professionally until 6 months after I already was doing it professionally. I never intended to become a comic. I always wanted to be a writer.
You studied at Columbia, is that right?
I did.
And what was your major?
I was an American history major with a writing minor.
Okay.
The problem with Columbia, I mean, I loved it there, but the problem with Columbia is that you major in a department, not a discipline, and so that's very frustrating because I wasn't even really an American history major. I was a history major with a concentration in American. There were like 8 things you could choose from, which, you know, they always talked about, oh, you know, we really want to make you guys well-rounded. I'm like, great, so teach us a little bit of everything, which really leads to nothing. Very, very frustrating. So I took as many writing classes as I could.
So while you were at Columbia, you were a columnist as a student?
I wrote very flippant columns for The Spectator, which was fun because The Spectator's history, and it still happens now, like every now and then, you know, it'll make a national news story because The Spectator's history is basically a whole bunch of 19-year-olds who have never been, you know, outside of their front yard just telling the world about foreign policy. And it's very, very frustrating. So my columns were just silly things. You know, my columns were, I wrote about Saved by the Bell, and I wrote about drunken escapades on campus, and just silly things, and it was, you know, it was fun, and it resonated with people because of that, because I was the only one who wasn't, you know, just being like, this is what the president should do, and I'm like, 19, shut up.
was it your column that led you to life outside of campus in terms of things professionally, or what was that next step that you took?
Well, the column actually came after, the column was my senior year.
Okay.
And I had already As a junior, I was actually a professional sports writer. I took a year off in the middle of my junior year. So after one semester junior year, I took a year off to write for the New York Yankees. And that was also the same year that I started writing a column for collegehumor.com, which was, at the time, a three-month-old website that nobody knew about.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, years later, sold for $50 million, though unfortunately I did not own any of it.
So you've got writing, and you've got the year that you've taken off, and then you go back and you start your column. At what point did you get on the stage? When did that happen for you?
I got on the stand-up stage my senior year of college. So, you know, I've been doing this column for College Humor that had been fairly successful, and I always wanted to try stand-up. And I had actually written a bunch of jokes down my freshman year of college. We were walking around Times Square, we went to some amateur night, and I wrote a bunch of jokes down, and I never bothered putting the work in to memorize them or actually try them. And then I went to a stand-up show senior year, and I was like, you know what, I should just do this. And I went and I did, and I thought that was it. You know, bucket list accomplished, crossed it off. 9 months later, graduated, couldn't find a job, trying to promote the book. Went to a college to, you know, do a talk basically to promote the book, and they asked me if I could do stand-up. And I'm like an idiot. I was like, yeah, sure, I'll do that once. I can do a half hour. It went well, and I really wish I had a tape of it to see, did it go well because I, you know, pulled a rabbit out of a hat, or did it go well because these people were idiots and they just believed it was good.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, but it should not have gone well.
So with that, and from what I understand, we booked you through my husband, who did an interview with you beforehand, and he is also a writer. But from what I understand, you're also very involved in the business side of things in terms of club acquisition and management and that sort of thing. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I like creating, and, you know, business allows you to create as well,
mm-hmm.
because you can create on a larger scale. You know, when I create stand-up, yeah, it's fun. But, you know, when I create a business, you know, you end up employing a dozen people. You end up changing people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you can be very creative in how you do that. You know, I've always viewed business just as understanding what a human being wants, you know, and then trying to give it to them. And that's basically what sales is.
Yeah.
You know, and that's our approach to, you know, to the comedy clubs, you know, making it more about the experience. And it was something that I got involved in at first accidentally. I would kind of always find myself in a manager or owner's office at the end of the week, just talking to them about social media. Here's everything you're doing wrong. Here's why, you know, you've got to look into online and not print and radio anymore, you know. And eventually one of them said, hey, can we pay you to help? And then that kind of led to a position as a consultant, and then that led to me being like, you know, I want to open my own clubs.
Was there a learning curve, or what was the learning curve for you going from someone who is creative, who'd been a writer and then was on stage, going into consulting and then owning your own business? Was there a learning curve, and what was that learning curve about for you if one existed?
I have made more mistakes than most people have made decisions. There's a huge learning curve. Every time you do something new, there's a learning curve. And sometimes you guess right on the first try, and sometimes you guess horrifically wrong. But the important part is being willing to admit mistakes, being willing to learn from mistakes, and being willing to take ideas from anyone, no matter who they are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't need, like, we can take an idea from someone who works the door if it's a good idea, even if it has nothing to do with the door, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's, we want good ideas from everywhere, and you know, and that's, I mean, part of the learning curve is learning to identify which ones are good with a higher success rate.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody who says any business that they've gotten into is easy is someone who got very lucky.
Ain't that the truth? Now, from what I understand, your commitment to comedians and finding that life and career balance has led you to create a grant. Where did that idea come from?
So the Martin Grant, which is named in memory of my father, is, you know, the idea, it came from just years of noticing that so much of a comedian's life is spent doing non-comedy things because they need to afford to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and you see people who, would skip 5 years. 5 years, you know, of their life if they could just not have that, you know, serving job or drive for Uber or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea of the Martin Grant is, you know, it's not enough money to change someone's life, but it's enough money to help. And, you know, my father always, you know, big believer in charity, big believer in helping people. He was someone, the way that, you know, my wife and I described him, is he always showed up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you needed a move, he'd show up to help you. You needed a ride somewhere, he'd show up to drive. You know, you threw a party for some life event, he would show up. And so, you know, this scholarship is me showing up.
That's fantastic. How would one find out a little bit more about this or apply for the scholarship?
Well, applications are done for this year. You can go to comedygrant.com to find out a little bit more.
Okay.
We take, you know, donations in all forms, but one of the things that actually fuels a lot of money behind it is we sell shirts with a little red alien, the Snoo.
Mm-hmm.
And we, you know, doing stand-up comedy. It's a neat shirt. It was something that someone made for me as a gift, just because I'm on Reddit a lot, and I loved it, and I was like, and every time I wore it, a comedian would be like, hey, where do I get one of those?
Mm-hmm.
And so we talked to Reddit about the scholarship, and they loved it, and we got permission to sell the shirts, you know, to try to raise money for it, and so if someone loves the idea, or if they just want a really cool shirt, which, by the way, very, very soft, you know, none of this blend garbage, this is very nice stuff, they can go and they buy one, and 100% of the gross, not the net,
mm-hmm.
you know, I pay for shipping, and I pay for the shirt out of pocket, and 100% of the sales go right to the grant. And we're actually going to announce the finalists probably within a week or two.
Oh, that's exciting. We'll definitely keep our listeners informed about that. If you had to give, and this is going to sound like a really generic question, but I love to ask this of all of my guests because we have listeners from all over the world in 71 different countries, and all of their experiences are so different. But so many of us, we do live the same lives just on different continents. If you could give folks advice, if they're looking to get into comedy or into writing, what would you suggest they do? Where would you suggest they start?
You know, instead of getting the technical of like, well, here's the way to submit, well, mm-hmm. I mean, I will say The Writer's Market is a book that changed my life, and I believe everybody should, you know, get it and read it and use it. The, you know, my advice is mean it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want to do this, then do it, because you are the only person who can make that happen. There's so many times, every time I hear a comic talk about how, oh, well, the industry is prejudiced against X, or they're just not ready for my material, or it's that, like, how many excuses can you make
mm-hmm.
before you understand that you're not an artist? You're not an artist if you don't understand that all you need to do is create amazing art.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, having a business sense helps, being, you know, being a likable person. You know, there are a lot of other things that play into it. But the most important thing to do, and the root of it all, is create art. Steve Martin said that, you know, be so good you can't be ignored.
Hmm.
And, you know, and Joan Rivers has a great quote about, you know, just put your blinders on. And that's the way you succeed.
Where can we find you next, Steve? Where will you be? Are you currently touring?
Yeah, so I'm in Louisville this weekend. I've got a couple shows in Chicago and Indianapolis next week. I have a fun week. I'm actually throwing out two ceremonial first pitches, one for the Louisville Bats and one for the Milwaukee Brewers.
Nice.
So that's going to be a ton of fun. Yeah, I get to do that every now and then, and I'm a big baseball fan. So
that's great.
That's like a little kid dream to do.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I'll be bouncing around all over the place this year. And for people in L.A., I have a standing gig every Wednesday night that I'm in town at least, which is most of them. Every Wednesday I have a show at the Laugh Factory called Supply and Demand. It's one of the hottest shows in L.A. Last night we had Pete Holmes, Nick Kroll, and Tom Papa all in one lineup.
Fantastic.
So, and if people want free tickets to it, the first 50 tickets are always free. That's
wow.
The idea. You get in early before the demand rushes too much, you get the supply. So if you go to comedysupply.com, you can pick up some free tickets and come out to, you know, one of the best clubs in the world and an amazing lineup.
That's fantastic. Well, Steve, thank you so much for joining us here on the Acting for Your Life podcast. We really appreciate your time, and break a leg tonight.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And thanks again to Steve Hofstetter for joining us here on Wise Words Wednesdays with the Acting for Your Life podcast. For more information on how to find Steve on his tour and the special programs that he's been talking about, you can go to our website, actingforyourlife.com. That's acting, the number for yourlife.com. You can also find us on Facebook at Acting for Your Life and Twitter. Our Twitter handle is acting, the number for your life. Thanks so much for tuning in, guys. Don't forget to go to the Acting for Your Life website and register for our new online training series and for our live workshops and special events. We look forward to working with you soon and helping you find balance in life and career. Now go out there and break some legs.